Hey, everybody. Welcome to Just for Variety. Today is October 12th, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's episode, I'm chatting with Juliana Margulies. The Emmy-winning actor, best known for ER and The Good Wife, recently made her debut on the second season of The Morning Show, playing Laura Peterson, a lesbian news anchor who becomes a surprise love interest for Reese Witherspoon's character, Bradley. Then later in the show, I catch up with Noomi Rapace, who stars in the new Icelandic horror thriller, Lamb. But before we get to my interviews, let's take a look inside the pages of Variety. Shangela, Bob the Drag Queen, and Yuriko O'Hara are back for a second season of We're Here, their HBO reality show in which they travel to small towns across the U.S. to help local LGBTQ residents put on a drag show. I attended the premiere this past Friday on the Sony lot in Culver City. The star-studded guest list included Charlize Theron, Zooey Deschanel, and Molly Shannon. Shangela told me, "I'm feeling great. I just feel so grateful. I grew up in Paris, Texas, not seeing a lot of visibility and representation, and now we get to bring that and amplify those voices throughout America." We're Here premiered on HBO on October 11th to coincide with National Coming Out Day. You could also see a photo gallery from the premiere party at Variety.com. Welcome back to Just for Variety. Juliana Margulies may be best known for her award-winning work on ER and The Good Wife, but now everyone is talking about her guest role on season 2 of The Morning Show. Margulies plays Laura Peterson, a news anchor who arrives to interview Alex, played by Jennifer Aniston. But then a bombshell storyline. Laura, an out lesbian, begins a romance with Bradley, played by Reese Witherspoon. I talked to Margulies about being asked to play a gay woman, why she loves Laura so much, and if she's going to be back if The Morning Show is picked up for another season. Plus, I couldn't not ask her about the 15-year anniversary of Snakes on a Plane, which she starred in with Samuel L. Jackson. Here's Juliana Margulies.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am good. I was just saying I'm getting over a cold, which, you know, during these time periods, you tell someone you have a cold and it's like, oh.
Yeah, it's frightening, I know. If you sneeze, you're like, I don't have COVID. I'm okay.
No, literally, my husband had strep throat last week and I was at some event and someone said, oh, where's Fabian? That's my husband's name. And I said, oh, he has strep throat, not COVID.
Right, I know. It's just going to be that for a while and that's okay.
That's okay, as long as it's just a cold.
As long as it's not COVID.
Right. How are you? How has your last 18 months been?
I'm good. I mean, I can't complain about anything, you know? I got to work during COVID and we had a place to go that wasn't in New York City and we had space. So I feel very fortunate compared to so many. In New York, it really feels like it's almost over.
Does it? Yeah, because I've come back a few times. My mom's out on Long Island. So I've come back a few times. And the first time I came back was in the heaviness of it. And I was staying actually in the Times Square area. And I grew up in Queens. So I know, you know, I know New York. And I was just like, this city has been shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a ghost town. But yeah. Now you wouldn't know. I mean, I was in front of a live audience last night at Colbert, even though they were all masked. But everyone inside the building had been tested, but it felt so good to be back. You know, just see people, that energy. I've just missed it.
And you go back to work, you go do the morning show. How long hadn't you been working when you went to set for the morning show?
I think it had been about 8 months, maybe nine months since I had worked. Yeah. It felt crazy. In fact, maybe it hadn't been quite that long because I was on my way actually to a fitting for my last episode of Billions in March. And we were in the car and the phone rang and they said, we're shutting down everything right now, go home. And so maybe it had been less than that. Yeah, it had been about seven or eight months.
It's weird. That's becoming that thing. Like, where were you when you were told, don't come back to work?
Yeah, I know. And my husband came home from work on March 11th, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he said, let's pack our bags and get out of here. And I was like, wow. What does that mean?
You're like, wait a minute.
We packed for 2 weeks and we ended up there for, 8 months.
is this an episode of The Hot Zone?
And yeah, well, I mean, last night on Colbert, he showed a clip of my last appearance on the show where I was promoting Hot Zone. And I was talking about it wasn't a matter of if another pandemic would happen, it was a matter of when. And he showed that clip. And I said, no one listened.
But how many people called you during this going, what do you know?
I don't know much. I immediately got in touch with Nancy Jacks, the infectious disease specialist that I played on The Hot Zone, just to say, hey, are you okay, when the pandemic happened? And also to say, are we all going to survive this? Wow. And she said, you know, we had a task force in place that Obama had in the White House that the Trump administration got rid of the second they came into office. And had we had that, we would have been way ahead of the curve. So there you go. Good times.
You know, I want to say it still shocks me, but it doesn't. And
nothing shocks anymore, right?
Right. And that's kind of scary, isn't it?
I mean, that's why they couldn't keep Veep going, because yeah. I remember Julia Louis-Dreyfus going, it can't get more absurd than the president we have. So there you go. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're on the morning show. Laura is a great character.
Thank you. I love playing her. I love her.
So when they come to you, is it a matter of they sit down and give you sort of a log line on who Laura is, or it's like, here's a script, tell us what you think? How does that come about?
Yeah, no, it was Carrie Aaron, the showrunner. She had a whole outline for who Laura was in the past and where her character was going, which is rare. You know, it's rare to get such a rich 20-year history of who this character was before you get to play her. That's usually the homework I do on my own. And I didn't have to do much, except I had so many resources because I knew her backstory and her relation, her history with Jennifer Aniston's character, Alex. And so I got to do the fine tuning of the work in terms of my own, you know, preparation, but it was pretty much there on the page. And that was exciting.
What do you like about her?
You know, I really love that she's 100% comfortable in her own skin and she has no ulterior motives. She doesn't have a hidden agenda. She is probably the only character on that show that has no hidden skeletons in her closet. And so to me anyway, the way I view her in the midst of all this chaos that's going around and all these secrets people are trying to keep, it's like she just, all she has to do is stand still just to make a difference, you know? You see this stillness in her where she's looking, it's almost like she's the lens of the audience. And the audience gets to watch these people absolutely, like they're spiraling down in front of your eyes, but you sort of see it through Laura's, and Laura's done all the work on herself in the, you know, to get completely comfortable with who she is in her sexuality, to have gone back to, you know, field work and journalism and really earned her stripes the right way to get to where she is in her career, which is at the top. It's sort of a wonderful place to play, to watch people squirming and to say, you know, your life doesn't have to be this hard. You're making it much harder than it needs to be.
But by the time this runs, it'll be after the fourth episode. And I'll preface everything with, like, there might be spoilers, so don't worry. But I love when Bradley breaks the vase. And I'm like, okay, that was a little unhinged.
Yeah,
it was just grab,
a little. By the way, in the script, it says a Ming vase. So it's like a you know, $100,000 vase. Just, it's a Ming dynasty vase. Just, you know, and she hands me the Crate and Barrel $300 gift certificate where my character's like, okay.
which, by the way, you didn't have to say Ming vase. Looking at that apartment and seeing Laura, I knew, I was like, that was really expensive. That wasn't just a Crate and Barrel vase.
Right.
But what I love, when Laura's like, okay, later. You're, like, you're the only character who could make like this clean cut. Everybody else tries to, you know, for lack of a better term, break up with each other professionally or personally, but they can't do it clean. It's all so messy. Where Laura's like,
so messy. Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. Laura has no time for that crap. You know, that's what was so fun playing her was she's like, it's actually much easier to live life when you have clarity. Mm-hmm. Right. And they all have this like just cobwebs in front of their eyes that they can't seem to get out of. And even, you know, even Corey, who's her good friend from a long time ago, you know, he's got his own agenda and stuff going on. Like everyone's scared of they're running scared. Mm-hmm. And Laura isn't.
Did you reach out to people in broadcast journalism and say, is it anything like this?
Yeah, there were a few, well, I didn't even have to because a few of them, when they heard I was doing it, reached out to me and said, oh my God, you're doing the morning show. I don't think it's much. They have to take artistic license to make it interesting.
Right.
I can pretty much guarantee you that Gail King isn't throwing anyone under the bus on her set, but I'm sure there's a few things in there.
What I also couldn't help but wonder, and I know you've talked about this, where you look at Ellen DeGeneres and look at other LGBTQ, you know, personalities, celebrities, bullface names, whatever you want to call them. But you, in episode 4, you talk about it being, I believe it was 1997.
Yeah, it was like 97, 98. It was right. It was right just before when my character got outed,
right,
and then fired for being gay. It was just before Ellen came out.
Yeah. I still have that Time magazine.
Yeah. Says, yep, I remember reading it. And I actually was on the Ellen show as a guest star. That I was doing ER and they asked me to come over and do a, I don't remember what I played. It was back, like, it was back in the 50s or something, the actual episode. And it was just before then. And she came out, I think, the next week or something. And I just remember being like, wow, brave, fantastic, yeah, good for you.
Do you remember when you were, listen, you're at the height of your fame, it's ER. Do you remember actors, producers who said, you know what, I can't be out in Hollywood?
Yeah, I mean, no one ever said it to my, I don't know anyone who ever said it to my face, really, but you mm-hmm. knew who they were. And it always felt, I always felt devastated for them. Mm-hmm. Because the idea of not being able to work because of your sexual preference mm-hmm. is so antiquated and so ridiculous. It's like saying to me, well, you're not a single mother, you're married, so now I can't play one.
Right.
Like, what? You know, or, you know, telling actresses who have never had children, they can't get the role of being the mom because they've never had children. I mean, we're talking about, you know, we act.
Right.
You play it. I understand that I can't play black. You know, I understand when it comes to race and that, you know, we need to, you know, broaden all our horizons and allow people to work 100% all the time. But when it comes to your sexuality, I just don't understand why that's an issue. I never have, but I'm naive right. that way. And I don't have religious beliefs. And I think that's where we get into a whole, especially for a journalist to be fired because she's been outed, by the way, against her will.
Right.
It was really easy to crawl back into her skin and understand how she would feel then. As a journalist. And what I admire about the character is that she said, okay, I better come to terms with being gay and being public if I want to be a journalist. And instead of, you know, trying to get back into the seat she had just gotten fired from, she went back out into the field and did what she loved studying in school, which is field work, you know, being in the midst of the war, the battle, the crisis, and putting her life on the line and then building her way back up so that when she does get to when you meet her, when the audience meets her, she's been through it. Yeah. So seeing her react to Bradley and Alex and all that's going on the morning show is kind of, it's just delicious.
Yeah, I feel like Laura has done some years of therapy.
So many years of therapy. I mean, there's an episode, I don't think you've seen it yet, but there's an episode where she says to Bradley, she's like, have you ever thought about therapy? You need some help, honey.
Was there any hesitation about playing a gay character? We do talk a lot about representation, about LGBTQ actors wanting those roles. Was there a hesitation at all saying, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be doing this?
In other words, a gay actor should do it? Or
yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Because they asked me to do it. And I've played a gay character before, and who's to say I haven't had my own gay experiences? Like, you know, we're making assumptions then.
That's a really good point.
You know, I felt like they were going with what they felt was the best choice for them and the best choice to fit in between these two very powerful lead women on that show. Mm-hmm. But I know there was some trepidation of, you know, will lesbian actresses be angry? And I can tell you, I would never, ever be angry if a lesbian played a straight woman.
Right.
And I don't think there's, you know, I haven't seen the discrimination towards lesbians to play gay women.
Right.
So I don't know if it's the same kind of conundrum. But maybe I'm naive, maybe it is. And if so, I apologize. But no one's asked me about my sexual history. So I feel like that's my job.
I'm not asking you about your sexual history.
No, I know, but my whole point is just saying,
It's a very valid point. I think
I think
Benedict Cumberbatch said it also recently in the same way. He said, you know, now we're what, you know, we could get into the whole politics of what makes someone
gay. Doesn't
mean
Kate Winslet can't play an American in Mare of Easton? Does it mean that, you know, none of the Australian actresses that are taking parts away from American actresses, you know, Kate Blanchett played Katharine Hepburn, for crying out loud. You know, where was the uproar in that? You know, Kristen Davis just played Princess Diana. We're actors. It's what we do. I understand where the line needs to be drawn.
Right.
When it comes to race, 100%. I would never take a part away from a Hispanic actor. Like, I honestly, my first role, I played a Puerto Rican girl in a Steven Seagal film, but back then you didn't even think about it. Mm. You know, it wasn't part of the dialogue.
Right.
Whereas now, I'm not in a million years, I would say, no, go find a Puerto Rican to play a Puerto Rican. But that doesn't mean that I can't play English or French, or, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You have to draw the line at certain things, but I am sensitive to it. I think it was with Rupert Everett, where I remember him reading an article about him talking about how scared he was to come out.
Yeah.
And that he wouldn't work, you know? And I just remember reading it and thinking, my God, that is devastating.
But we do have to talk about the kiss.
Oh, okay.
My husband and I were on the couch. We're watching. And it literally is one of those moments where we looked at each other, wait, what? I saw that, right?
What just happened?
Literally, when did you know the kiss was going to happen? Reading the script or beforehand?
Reading the script. When they sent it to me to offer me the role, they sent me the first script, and it's in the first script I'm in, the first episode I'm in, the episode 3. I did not know, by the way, until it aired that it was called Laura. I didn't know the episode was called my character's name. I was really excited about that because I thought, wow, the character's made a real impression on Bradley for sure, but also on Alex, you know, and that is what I loved about it too, was that, you know, I've talked about this before, but the fact that they have these, you know, you've got Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon playing these two very strong characters. And in the second season, instead of bringing a man in to upset that balance, they brought in a woman. And I, you know, hats off to that. Because the truth is, women are more afraid of women anyway. They dress for women. You know, we don't dress for men. We dress for each other. We want to impress each other much more so, I think, than we want to, at least where, from where I'm from. it made so much sense, you know, and I thought, ah, a show that gets women, this is great.
When you look back on your, you know, and this is going back to, you know, being on ER, could you have ever imagined a script coming along and them saying, you're going to kiss Reese Witherspoon or kiss one of the biggest...
Kiss America's sweetheart.
Right. I mean, just a few years ago, it wouldn't have happened.
You really think just a few years ago?
Yeah. Or it would have... Here, let me take it back. It would have happened a few years ago, but it would have been made into an event.
Right. Well, and also, I think, because I did a movie... that Gurinder Chadha directed called What's Cooking, where Keira Sedgwick and I were a couple. Mm-hmm. And we had quite a few intimate scenes in that movie. And I think it, I think you're right. I think with television, it's very different. It was very different back then. Yeah. And it wouldn't have happened. I mean, I did that movie in, I think it was 98 or 99 maybe. But I think now with streaming, the lines have been blurred, right? Between film and television, it sort of seems to be all one. I mean, every movie star seems to want to do television, and I say, welcome to it. And I'm so glad they finally figured it out. But I do think it definitely, it wouldn't have happened on network television anyway.
Yeah.
But I can imagine cable.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a few years ago, Modern Family. When Jesse Tyler Ferguson and why am I forgetting his name? Who plays his husband? Eric Stone Street. When they kissed, it was literally, I was interviewing both of them for weeks saying, are you going to kiss?
Because that was a big deal, right?
It was a big deal and they couldn't say. And it was like, it became this big sort of, they eventicized it in a way. Right. We're here. Which was amazing was, like I said, my husband and I are watching it and it's like, oh, wow, like no one leaked it. No one said it was happening. We had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We weren't allowed to talk about any of it.
I'm sure.
I know I was, I, you know, because I'm not a big social media person anyway. So she was like, we were taking pictures, not of us kissing, but of each other, you know, together on the set. And she's like, now, y'all can't post that until the show comes out. And I, you know, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. Meanwhile, I'm like, I don't even know how to post anything anyway, so it doesn't matter.
So season three, will Laura be back?
If they want me to, I would be back. I haven't heard officially that there is a season three yet.
Me
so
neither.
I think what?
Me neither.
Yeah. Okay. So if there is, I would be back in a jiffy. I really loved playing her. And I think it will be easier to film when we're not in the midst of the pandemic. You know, it's gotten, it even got easier as in the beginning, it was just, it was too much of a time commitment for me because I live in New York and they film in LA. And with the pandemic, I had to quarantine for 7 days and then shoot, and then, you know, someone would get COVID on the set and you'd have to quarantine again. And before I knew it, it was 3 weeks and I hadn't been with my family. And I just said, guys, I can't do that. I've left them alone to fend for themselves. So I feel like next time, if there is a next time, it will be much easier and just faster for me anyway.
So now I have to ask you a fun question.
Okay.
This year marks 15 years of Snakes on a Plane.
Woohoo! That's so funny. I just found, I was cleaning out my closet and I found my Snakes on a Plane hat. And oh gosh, I should auction that off to raise money for something, shouldn't I?
There you go.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Is it really been 15 years?
August was 15 years.
Yes. You know, that piece of deep, deep intellectual literature that I managed to get up on screen. I had a ball shooting that film.
Yeah. What do you remember most?
I remember most that Samuel L. Jackson had in his contract that he had to be 25 feet away from snakes at all times. And so I was like, yeah, I'm with him. So he and I never actually went near real snakes ever. They scare me to death. I think it's just because they're not cuddly. Like you can't, I just don't understand them. I remember that the most was that I was on a movie called Snakes on a Plane and I never once had an encounter with a snake. A few fake ones I did, which was kind of fun, but not real ones.
Do you remember how that project came to you and how it was pitched? I want to be in that pitch meeting.
You know, what I remember is I remember Samuel L. Jackson's agent called me and said, he's going to do this movie. You should do it with him. And I was like, I'll do anything with Samuel L. Jackson. I'd love to be in a movie with Samuel L. Jackson. And then I went in and I met the director. I don't think there was a full-on script yet. But I didn't care. I had never done that kind of camp, sort of an action-y movie. And it was Samuel L. Jackson. So I was on board right away. It's not a great movie. We can say that, right? But I know people love it.
People love it. And listen, we still quote it.
Well, how can you not? How can you not quote that movie? I mean, he says it so brilliantly. But it was his movie through and through. And he was so much fun to work with. He's Samuel L. Jackson. How can you get, it doesn't get better than that.
I mean, just the title of it is just so direct, I guess.
Well, they actually tried to change the title. If I'm remembering correctly, they actually tried to change the title. And Samuel said, no fucking way. I signed up to do this movie because it's called Snakes on a Motherfucking Plane. And that's what we're going to call it.
So has your son watched it?
No, he doesn't watch anything I'm in.
Not even Snakes on a Plane.
No, I've asked him. I've said, do you have any desire? He's really into anime right now. And he loves like sword fighting and stuff. And I said, honey, I galloped on horses and drew swords and killed Saxons in Mists of Avalon. And I did most of my own stunts. We have the DVD. You can watch it. And he was like, why? He doesn't like to see me other than the mother. And I think that's healthy. I'm fine with it.
I like that. Well, you will never remember this, but I was on a set of yours years ago when you and Renee Zellweger playing Hasidic Jews.
The Price Above Rubies.
Yes.
I think I was the only Jewish person in that movie. Jewish person in that movie. Oh, no. Peter Jacobson, who played Shmuel, my husband. And do you know that is one line I've taught my son? Because Boaz Yakin, I had a line that said, round up the kids and take them to Davin Marifet Shul, Shmuel. That was my line. And I couldn't say it with a straight face. And I just kept laughing. It was awful. Like I could not. And I said, could you either take the Shul out of the line or the Shmuel out of the line? But I can't say take them to Shul Shmuel because it just sounds crazy. And he just sat there, arms crossed. He goes, nope, you got to say it. I finally did, but only because it was getting so late and I was laughed out.
That is genius because I do love telling people when they don't know. I'm like, Renee Zellweger once played
us. She had a shadle. And I looked like Annette Funicello with that shadle. I had like the bang. I looked like Annette Funicello from the Mickey Mouse Club. It was great. I shot that, I think, while I was doing ER. Yeah.
Yes. And Renee, I think Jerry Maguire had just come out. Yeah.
Oh, I had to kiss. She kisses me in that. Remember, she has this moment in the movie where, I'm her sister-in-law, where she's sort of just falling apart and she just grabs me and kisses my lips. Wow. See, I've played many a lesbo. In fact, Carol Hathaway, apparently there was a whole thing going on when I was playing Carol Hathaway. There was a big lesbian bar in Hollywood, and that's where they would go Thursday nights to watch Carol Hathaway. I must have given off that vibe or something.
Oh, for sure. Carol was a lesbian icon.
Yeah, I didn't know that until a few years into it. And I was so, oh my God, I wore that as a badge of honor.
And now Laura is the next one.
I'm all for it.
This is awesome. This is so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
That was Juliana Margulies. We're going to take a short break, but when I return, I'll be chatting with Noomi Rapace, star of A24's new Icelandic horror thriller, Lamb. I'll be right back. Welcome back. Noomi Rapace first earned our attention playing Lisbeth Salander in the Swedish film adaptation of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. In her latest project, Lamb, she plays Maria, a woman who lives on a remote farm in Iceland. Before I go any further, I do need to warn you that the interview contains spoilers. Maria and her husband Ingvar decide to raise a baby lamb as their own child because half of its body is human. It's a horror thriller that I promise will leave you thinking about and discussing this film for a very long time. Here's Noomi Rapace.
What the hell? I have so many questions. And what I do have to, you know, warn listeners is that you can't talk about this movie really in full without spoilers. Because the premise of the movie is wacko. So let's start. How, when people say to you, what is Lamb about? What do you tell them?
It's a love story. Yeah. It's the story about motherhood, grief, and how far you'll go to heal and to protect your child, sort of. And what I love about the film is like, it actually like, it has so many layers, and there's like many ways to, people see different films and people see different stories in it. And for me, it was like, it almost like two stories going on at the same time.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So is it a horror? Is it a thriller? What is it?
I feel like it's its own genre. It's like light horror drama, but it's very Icelandic. And I grew up in Iceland and everything is kind of on the edge there. So I'm like, it's just a film.
Is that how, I've never been to Iceland. You just said that it's very Icelandic. Is that how life is? Because that's on edge.
No, I mean, I moved to Iceland when I was like 5, and my grandmother was like, we're out riding, and she was like, yeah, we can't cross that hill because that's the elf hill, you know. So I mean by that is like, you know, they live very close to nature and maybe creatures we don't see, and there's like, you know, animals and humans and fairies and elves, and like, you know, they're here, you know, they're around. You might not see them, but you know, he's standing right there behind you. So that kind of 360 awareness of all kind of life forms, some you might not see, I was very like open for that idea as a child. Mm-hmm. So I think like when Lamb, what I mean is like the whole like folklore, the old mysteries, like I grew up with this, you know, every Christmas they scare the kids with like Grilla. It's like this Icelandic witch. She's going to come and eat you if you're not a good kid. And then Grilla has like, you know, the Jólakötturinn, which is like the Christmas cat will come and snatch you. And I was like, it was like all these really brutal things. And I was like, and they were so normal. And I was like, I remember I was really quite stubborn as a kid. I was like, I was so angry one Christmas. I was like, bring her on. Like, let me talk to her. Like, I was so angry that everyone was like trying to like scare me off. And I was like, so I think like for, in that sense, it's very Icelandic, because for Icelandic people, they wouldn't even ask what kind of genre this is. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, it's, you know, it's a story.
It's a fairy tale.
It's a fairy tale.
So, you know, you star as one half of a couple who is raising this mysterious, I guess that's a good word for it, half lamb, half human child lamb baby.
Yeah.
So my question is it real? Or what I got was that the couple suffered some sort of loss of a child, and they, you know, they are these farmers, and this lamb is born, and for some reason they're seeing this lamb as half human, where even when we're watching, and obviously the lamb is in children's clothing and walking on two legs, my head is going, oh, no, 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 that's not reality. That's what this couple is seeing.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think it is. You can see Atta, my baby lamb, as a metaphor for healing. I mean, that is, because when you look at Maria, my character in the beginning, she's quite shut down. She doesn't really speak much. She's just kind of doing what she needs to do to get on with her life, like the daily routines, but she's not open. She shuts something down because it's too much pain in her. And then Atta is born, this baby lamb, and then she just takes this opportunity to kind of build a bridge from the trauma, from the moment her heart broke, into something new, to hope for a future, for a bridge into something lighter. And she puts all that hope into this gift. She calls Atta a gift, and it's an opportunity to heal. So she makes, I think like Atta becomes like medicine, you know, medicine mm-hmm. for the soul. And is she there or not? Is it just a lamb? Or is it a baby lamb? For me, it was very real, because we shot with both babies and lambs. And I think like in my head, I just melted those two, you know, bodies into one.
Whoa.
So wait, Mark, I turned into a weird, I was like so asocial. We were shooting up in like in Akureyri, which is like up in the north part of Iceland. I didn't talk to anyone. I was like hanging with the animals, driving the tractor, going to the gym in the mornings, ending in the gym in the evenings, didn't have dinners. I was like in my little bubble, more closer to the animals and to the nature than to anyone around me.
And was this because of your background or more because of some sort of kind of method acting that maybe you didn't even realize you were doing at the time?
I would say that each character kind of decides the destiny of my life for that moment and like guides me, and I just let her take me. And I felt like Maria very much just hijacked my body, and her pain, because yeah, they did lose their own child 4 years ago, and she never recovered. And then I felt when we started walking, my body was in so much pain, and then I was like very minimal in my communication with people. And it was not really a choice. And I guess my method is that I always just try to embrace whatever the character needs me to do. I'll go there. And I try to be open and just like, okay, what's required right now. But it's, you know, it was a hard shoot, because it was quite, we were isolated. It was quite rough. You know, it was the smallest production I've ever been on. And I think some people even lived on the farm where we shot it. It was so intimate. And it was very, it was an amazing little crazy adventure of searching into yourself, you know?
What I found fascinating when you watch the details behind the couple, the kitchen is spotless. When you drive in the Jeep and you're making coffee, the Jeep is spotless. It's like shiny new. And there was this, for me, it was this incredible, I don't know what the word is, but because I want to make sure that I'm saying it correctly, or just it's what I felt. This was this couple in grief, and there was such this darkness overhead, but the kitchen, like I said, the kitchen was spotless, the car was spotless, everything, yeah. Even when you're feeding the animals and yeah. they come over the thing and they're eating, everything is so controlled.
Yeah. It's like great, like a spotless order around you because you're so chaotic inside.
Yeah, you couldn't control your grief. Yeah. Or Maria was trying to control her grief. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's interesting, like in the end, when she danced and then, you know, she makes love to her husband and then she danced at night and then she starts to open up and life starts to fill her up again. And then in the end, after she drops the brother off, she comes back. And it's the first time you really hear her voice, you know, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but when she's like, rah, you know, it's like, yeah. It's almost like she needed to go on this intense, this summer of healing and to find her, for life to come back into her system and to be reborn somehow, but she needed to lose something for that to be possible. So it's this, it was very physical. And I could feel like towards the end, my skin started changing color. My lips started to get like more red. It was this weird, like I could feel like I had no circulation in the beginning of the shoot. Like I was so cold and like bluish. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, like it was like life started oozing back into my body. But the pain in my, like the immediate pain was even bigger and greater. It was so weird. It was so physical.
Well, I was going to say, what did the script look like when you were handed the script? What is a script? You know, there is very, very, like you said, she doesn't speak that much. There's very little dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, the script was like that. And Valdemar and Hrönn, the producer, came to London to my house to have a meeting with me. They brought me the script and a book of Sjón, the poet, one of the writers, and then a lookbook, like this strange kind of mood board with like pictures and drawings and like really quite disturbing. And I was so obsessed with his lookbook. And I was like, this strange introduction to Valdemar's head, I guess. And I was like, well, I need to do this. I've been waiting for this since as long as I can remember. And I was like, read the script. It's like, they don't talk. And then I have this crazy imaginary, brutal and beautiful lookbook that is just so it was almost like a weird trip, like, you know, kind of I was hallucinating looking at it. I was like, I need to be brave and just jump into this universe.
How what was it like seeing the lamb baby, for the first time? As I mean, because I didn't know exactly the premise of the movie. I knew there was some half human, half animal. And when I was watching it, I was waiting and I was like, wait a minute, this is a lamb. Like, where's the half baby, half lamb? And then the moment where we saw the baby's tushy, our little bum, I went,
yeah.
When did you see that for the first time? Was it in post or when you first saw the movie? How did?
Yeah, it was in post. But also we had Peter Hjort is an amazing Danish man who works a lot with Lars von Trier. I think he did the fox in Antichrist. Do you remember that little weird fox? Yeah. So he was actually like, he was playing Ada, like he was the puppet master. So there was like a lamb head and he was walking this strange walk and like, you know, looking at us in a certain way. So she was kind of coming to life while we were shooting. But obviously when I finally saw the movie, or like the first rough cut, it was like with a lot of weird green screen effects still. But like, then it was like, I remember getting just goosebumps and I was like, oh, it's actually going to work. Cause I was scared, you know, cause you didn't know if it was going to work. You could have been really like really weird and tacky. Like if it was done the wrong way. I was like, why did Nomi do this small Icelandic movie with this weird baby human lamb?
I mean, when Ada is in the suspenders,
so cute.
But then, okay, so then everything's coming back to me now too. At the end, we can't talk about it. That's way too spoily. I can't. but we're going to talk about it, but I'm not going to include it. We'll talk about it at the end.
Yeah.
Cause it's just too spoily. It's almost though, when you're watching the baby lamb, at one moment I was like, come on, lamb, say something.
Yeah.
I wanted the lamb to talk. I thought at one point the lamb would start talking, but then I thought, I was like, if that happened, then I think it would, we'd really be taken out.
You know, it's really interesting, Mark, because that she used to talk. She had a few lines in the script and it didn't work because you broke the illusion. Like when I saw it, it was in the first cut, she had this weird little voice. And then it was like, because then you kind of open with saying, like, is she really there or no? Is she like, is she imagined by them? And I think when she had lines and she was talking, all of a sudden she just became way more real in a way that broke the possibility for her to exist different than in everyone's mind. You know what I mean? So I kind of like that they were brave enough to pull that.
Mm. Is this the start of a franchise? Are we going to see a movie called Puppy?
Yeah. Then the kitten. Come on, baby.
So many. Really?
Oh my God. We can go so many places. Maybe you'll see me as a half. Maybe next one is like my head on a sheep mama.
Well, funny you say that, because when the trailer came out, and our office went nuts. And the trailer, the post on Variety for the trailer did like these incredible numbers. People were just, as I'm sure you know, we were just fascinated by it. At one point, when I started to watch the movie, I was like, oh my God, am I gonna see her head on top of a lamb? For some reason, I wanna see Puppy for sure. I mean,
yeah,
because that makes the most sense.
I can start working on that. I'll talk to Valdemar today.
Well, thank you. This was fantastic. I'm so glad we got to talk about it, because it is a movie that I think so many people are going to have their ideas about what is happening, what's not happening, what's real, what's imagined.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I mean, it was interesting. One day we were shooting in the house, and the sheep mama was standing outside and just like, bah, bah, like going on. And I was like, you know, I was going nuts. I was losing. I was like, can you hear him? Shut up. You know? And I was running out one day. I was like, shut up. And it was really getting to me. And then I realized she was calling for a baby like I was calling for my baby. And then it was like, I had this like, it was for a split second. I was just looking at her. We were like staring at each other eye to eye. And I was like, we're not that different, you and me. You're like me, I'm like you, you know?
Well, it's, you know, they call it, you know, your animalistic instinct.
Yeah, so we are way more primal than I think, you know, this, we live in this beautiful technical world. Whenever we're doing this, Mark, you know, I'm talking to you and it feels like I'm hanging in Eat More Tacos room, you know? And then, but at the same time, if we meet and I hug you, you know, our pheromones, like, you know, our hormones, you will get a total different sense of me. Because then the animal, like the more primal animalistic side in us will kick in.
Our senses. It's our senses.
Exactly. And that was so, it was a really good reminder for me to be like brought back to the dirt and to the soil where everything started for me. It's like, I got really like centered back into myself. And it's like, this movie was, it's probably one of the most important movies in my life for as me as a human as well.
And was it as cold and damp as it looked?
Oh, yes. It was so awful. And I hate being cold. I love heat. I love to be sweaty.
Well, thank you again. Safe travels. And hopefully the next time I see you, it'll be in person.
Yes.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye. That was Noomi Rapace. Lamb is in theaters now. Thanks for listening to this week's Just for Variety. Remember, make sure to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mark Malkin. And for all your up-to-the-minute Hollywood news, go to Variety.com. See you next time.